I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Mark.
And I'm Stu.
And this is Bad Screenplays.
We've been writing screenplays for years, but couldn't get anyone to read them.
On each episode, I read an unsolicited script.
And I read one. We pull them apart and decide if they're any good, but mostly try and have fun with them.
Maybe these screenplays will attract attention or get greenlit by First Draft Productions, our own fictional production company. Hello, Stu.
Hello.
How's it going?
I've had a COVID test.
A test?
Yeah, I had to get a COVID test.
Wow. How'd you get on?
Just cough. I'm negative.
No virus detected?
No virus detected. I know, it's like, I just realised for you, you're having like 3 or 4 a week.
it's gone down to 1 a week now, but it's still enough. Like,
it's a novelty for me though, yeah. So I just got this cough on, like, so I thought, oh no, better get a test done. But you're super aware of it, like, even though that now I've got like a negative COVID result and I can go to the shops to get food and things, you every now and again you're like and it looks,
yeah, you're not just going to the shop thinking I've definitely not got COVID so I can just go to the shops and just like lick everything and cough on people's faces, yeah. And stuff.
I'm just waiting for someone to get like approach me and I'll be like, oh no, look, I've got it says negative. I'm good.
I actually had my first vaccine on Saturday.
Hey!
Which was nice. The one thing I wasn't expecting from the vaccine was the most horrific flu I've had in probably about 10 years.
No.
It was awful.
I've heard this from a couple of people.
Yeah, it was
really bad. You had the Oxford jab?
Yeah, man.
Yeah, that's the same. I've heard the same thing. Someone had the Oxford jab and they got dog sick for a few days.
There's a bad jab and a good jab, and I had the bad jab.
Bad jab.
Bad jab.
You want to get that AstraZeneca, lad?
I definitely wanted the Pfizer one. Fucking hell.
Oh, yeah, Pfizer. Yeah, that's it.
I'm extremely grateful, but, oh, my God, I had to take a day off work because I was that sick.
Really?
Yeah, man.
And apparently, the article I read, I think it was in The Atlantic, they said that the second jab is worse.
Oh, good. Can't
so
wait.
That's awesome.
I might just coast along on 75% vaccine.
It'll be good, yeah.
just stick with that one.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Mate. Right. Have you watched anything or listened to anything good recently?
I have. So on your recommendation, I gave the US Office another try.
Okay.
And I am deep into it. So
thanks for that.
Yeah, and also I just didn't watch seasons 1 or 2. I went straight to, started at 3, and it's great. You get these, a lot of it is sort of this predictable, obvious punchline driven comedy, which you don't really have to think much. But then there's these like moments, these laugh out loud, like cringe moments that like either Steve Carell or Ricky Gervais or Steve Merchant wrote. And it's just, it's so good.
No way. No way. I should jump right into that, I think. I've been watching like something very similar, actually. You sent me a picture of two of the biggest steaks I've ever seen in my life recently. And yeah. I was like, what the fuck? Like proper Flintstone style steaks. And followed by a picture of Ron Swanson.
Mulligans.
In Mulligans, doing that pose. And then I went on Netflix recently and they've dumped entire Parks and Rec on Netflix. And I was like, oh man, I could do probably it. Just jump into that again.
Yeah, it's great.
So I've just been like scattergunning, you know, episodes, just like, because I've seen it all anyway.
Yeah.
But I've just been jumping back in and I'm deep into it. Like,
he's going through his photo book of him with, you know, at Mulligan's, it's like the steak, ribeye, medium. He goes, the drink, Lafroy. The woman Lafroy next to me, a bitch, my ex-wife, Tammy. He goes, look at me, I'm just a boy. It's like him. He just looks the same as every other photo.
Yeah. I forgot how funny Aubrey Plaza was. She's fucking so good, isn't she?
So good.
There's an episode where Aziz Ansari's character's like doing a presentation and he's got Aubrey Plaza, I forget what a character's called, and Chris Pratt sat down and goes, okay, I'm about to do this presentation. Now, tell me exactly what you think. Be brutal. And she just goes, you're short.
Yeah, just tears him apart.
Before he even starts. I was like, oh, this is great.
Watch her on Conan doing an interview. She's crazier than a bag of frogs.
Oh, really?
It's great.
That's good. That's not disappointing then, because you want it to be a little bit like that.
Yeah. I also watched General Commander, the 2020 Steven Seagal release on Amazon Prime Video.
2020, oh no. Oh no.
It's got like a Ray Winston character whose eyes are too close together.
Seagal. Oh, what's it called? What's it called?
General Commander.
Oh, man.
It's about a team of crack CIA operatives who are targeting like live organ theft in Asia.
Okay, yeah.
it's just such a common thing.
Oh god, what is up with that that goatee?
Oh my god.
Oh god, I've got Ray Winston. He looks like a character creator on like whatever game, Fallout or something. And
he
then
does.
you just drag the eyes in.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. There's all kinds of characters in it.
Is Stone Cold? Is Stone Cold Steve Austin in there?
No, is he?
There's an image where it looks like Stone Cold's in it.
I think he was in something. He was in that one. I think he was in that like sniper special ops, wasn't he?
I mean, you see a wrestler in a film, you know it's going to be a stinking pile of shit.
Yeah.
It's so bad. Like, I reckon certain wrestlers, like John Cena, probably gets quite a lot of bums on seats because of how many people like want to go and see John Cena. But the couple of films I've seen him in, it's like, oh man, you could literally paint a face on a plank of wood and get more like emotion out of it.
Yeah, I thought in Trainwreck with Schumer, he was very funny because he had a small part and they'd written great lines for him and everything, and it was great. But then like a leading role for him. I agree. It didn't.
I'll have to check him out in Trainwreck. Maybe I've got him wrong, actually.
Oh, no, he's like Amy Schumer's boyfriend at the time. They've got some funny lines for him. Yeah, he'll probably find it funny.
Maybe they've just known how to use him. It's like, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger's highest grossing film and is widely regarded his best role was Terminator 2. Because that, I look at that and go, that's a fantastic performance, that film. I think that was the pinnacle of his career as well. I don't think he ever reached those heights. And you go like, I think Arnold Schwarzenegger is quite limited, but a good actor. But then you go, well, no, wait a minute, he's playing a robot. That's why he was so good. Because
yeah.
He's playing a robot. I think
he's playing a robot.
he definitely sends himself up a bit, doesn't he? You know, as it gets further on, like in Jingle All The Way and stuff like that. But
So apart from that, no, doing a bit of TV, had me COVID test. Spring is here now, so enjoying a bit warmer weather.
Oh, definitely. Bit of sun on your face.
Right.
It's not brightening your mood a bit.
Yes. Now,
speaking of brightening moods.
Speaking of sun on your face, I've sent you a script.
You certainly have, by the name of...
Go on, Steven Seagal in
Sea Level Threat.
I actually could see him in a film called Sea Level Threat.
Yeah, it's vague enough a title. That film you mentioned to me before, I've already forgotten what it's called. It was that memorable.
As the credits were rolling on General Commander, I did think that if you could cobble together that kind of CIA ex special, that kind of script, he'd probably make it into a film. If you cast him as like the hero, doesn't have to stand up, keeps the sunglasses on the whole time.
Do you think he's got a stand-in, like a sit-down stand-in?
For the back of his head?
He's just a stand-in that doesn't stand up.
Oh, God. Anyway, so yeah, Sea Level Threat could be commissioned by Steven Seagal's production company.
Yeah, they must just send them scripts like this, mustn't they?
Yeah.
Anyway, let's find out if it's worthy of Steven Seagal.
Yep.
Fade in. Internal submarine bedroom morning.
The bedroom on the submarine, sure.
It's the submarine bedroom, yeah. Cora, a woman wearing a navy uniform, wakes up in a messy cot. A cot? She's not an adult baby, is she? Is that what you call a bed on a boat, a cot?
Yeah, it must be.
Okay, let's take the writer's word for it. Mm. She looks around a bit, takes a deep breath, and stands up from it. The room is very small, with the cot taking up most of the space. Toys and that. Changing math.
Yeah.
She goes to the mirror, takes a small bit of bottled water, a bottle of milk. She pours it on her hands, seeps through her fingers. She takes the rest of it and wipes it on her unrested face. Unrested?
Oh, it's water. Okay. It's not milk.
It's not milk. It's definitely not milk. Internal submarine hallway continuous. Cora walks through the tiny submarine hallways. Internal submarine main area continuous. She went to the food rations and started to cook. She heats the rations up, but as she takes it out, she burns her hand on the food. Cora lets out a slight jump and drops all of the unprotected rations on the floor. Unprotected. She sits down on the chair and puts her hands on her face, crying. Atlas.
Yes.
Atlas. A man wearing a navy uniform walks up from another room. He has an unshaven face. This man's name is Atlas.
Atlas. There you go.
Me and Stu have got a mutual friend who might just be the funniest person I know. Mm. Genuinely hilarious person. He's funny when he's trying to be, and he's funny when he's not trying to be. And he thought that the god, is it Greek god or Atlas, name was Charles Atlas. So he thought there was a god called Charles.
Charlie Atlas.
You're like Dan Zeus or like freaking Damien Hades or whatever.
That's brilliant. John Thor. John Thor? No Thor, way! Yeah. No way!
Oh, maybe he's right. Oh, shit.
I didn't even think about that until it came out. Oh, dear.
Ian Thor,
yeah.
Right. So, Charles Atlas. Atlas. He needs to have a big, serious voice, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Hey, what happened?
She looks at him, still upset. Cora, crying. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I was just trying to prepare food for us. Atlas.
Hey.
He leans over towards her, wraps an arm around her. Atlas.
It's okay.
No, it's not. It's not, Charles.
No, it's not.
Cora, upset. No, we're already low on food and can't afford to get sick by eating this. Atlas sighs. He then takes a mop and cleans up the food mess.
There, all better.
Just spreads it around the kitchen floor.
Just brushing chicken around the floor.
Yeah.
Cora sniffs, calm it down. Cora, sincere. Atlas, what are we going to do? External, submarine continuous. The submarine has crashed at the bottom of the ocean, alone.
Ooh.
Okay, so they're stranded at the bottom of the ocean. Atlas, voiceover.
I don't know, Cora.
That's not a voiceover.
No, I know.
Cora is still uneasy. I would be as well. Locked on a submarine with Charles Atlas.
I know. Who seems a bit controlling. See how scared she got when he came in and he was going to see the mess?
I know, yeah.
I'm sorry.
It's passive aggressive,
it's
Atlas.
Okay.
Atlas aggressive. Atlas continued.
But it'll be okay. We'll meet back up with the rest of our Navy squad. I promise.
Cora nods. An ominous sound rumbles in the back of the submarine. They look at each other, worried, as Atlas grabs a loaded pistol and starts to creep towards the sound.
A pistol? On a submarine?
On a submarine. Okay. I imagine this guy's about 7.5 feet tall as well. He's like massive shoulders and he's like creeping towards the sound.
With a name like Atlas.
He's not going to be a little skinny guy, is he?
No.
He's not going to be another Kip, is he? Internal engine room continues. Atlas opens the door. As Cora follows behind, they look around, confused.
Must be a squeaky pipe.
Then, a giant crash occurs in the main area. Cora panting, okay, what was that? Atlas.
What the?
He continues back to the main area with Cora following. Internal main area continuous. The room is normal. It's a normal room.
It's a normal room on a submarine.
Except for a small scratch on the main window.
Oh.
Atlas goes up to it.
The window? The window in the submarine?
What are they called? Portholes? Or did they just not have windows at all?
No, they haven't got windows, I don't think. No, the pressure. That's a weak spot, isn't it?
It must be, you have to go
unless
down
it's one indeed of those little Titanic excavation submarines. You know, those little yellow ones with the arms.
Yeah, they're tiny though, aren't they? Like
they haven't got bedrooms though, no.
No, and a main seating area and a kitchen and stuff.
Right.
I imagine if you spilled food on the floor, you wouldn't be getting a mop to clean it up either, would you?
A wet wipe.
Yeah.
Ah, god damn it.
Atlas goes up to it, curious. He runs his hand against the scratch, analysing it. Cora, is everything okay? Atlas.
Yeah, I think it's just...
A great white shark. Bumps its head against the window. Bumps.
Yeah. Boom.
Like, oh, I'm sorry, I wasn't looking. Just looking at his phone. Shaking the whole thing and startling Atlas. He falls to the ground and backs up. Cora. Pointing at him. Cora, worried. Okay. Atlas covers Cora's mouth.
Ooh.
Don't do that.
Yeah, again.
Shh.
She's still... Oh, God. She's still panting as Atlas tries to calm her down. Atlas whispering.
Okay, Cora, listen. Remain calm.
It's Tommy.
It's Tommy, isn't it? Remain calm.
I'm a little... insulted that the only woman on the ship is painted as a hysterical wreck in the face of like and she's following him around the submarine, you know.
Yeah, he goes and checks the danger, she goes and cooks the food
and he's got startled. He's got his hand on her mouth going calm down.
Yeah, the man's gonna sort this out, like there's definitely a bit of a I wondered if this script will pass the Bechdel-Wallace test.
Yeah.
Let's find out. He turns his head to see the shark staring at them. They slowly back up, but the shark bangs on the window once more. Like, boom, boom, boom. A bigger crack starts to form. He bangs on it again and again and again. Each one getting more and more angry. Each one. Each crack getting more and more angry. Then... the shark opens its mouth and sinks its teeth into the spherical glass. Atlas.
Run.
She remains shocked. Atlas continued.
Run.
Cora hears him, then starts to sprint the other way. the shark then bites open the glass completely open, letting all of the ocean's water down in it.
All of it.
The entire ocean.
Every last drop.
Just like people on the beaches watching the sea just disappear.
Where's it gone?
Like fishing boats just stranded everywhere. The alarm starts blaring and red lights succumb to the whole submarine. They finally succumb to it, these lights. Atlas springs towards the back too. He sees Cora in the engine room. Cora, come on! Atlas jumps into the engine room as Cora shuts the steel door. Atlas, worried.
Yeah, that's a great white.
No shit.
Netflix keeps trying to get me to watch The Meg.
The Meg. That's Jason Statham, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Every time I turn on Netflix, it's either that or something else that just plays the promo for me.
No, I haven't seen that.
It's just like that. It's some like, I guess it's like a megala. It's some like thought extinct, prehistoric monster great white.
Okay.
And they're in some underground sea station, and it's the same thing. There's just like this big thing just trying to bite the glass open.
It's the big shark, and there's probably only so much story you can build around that, isn't there?
Man, I remember watching a movie as a kid with, it was the same thing. It was underwater, but it had like, was it like Most Def, the rapper, in it?
Again, wrestlers and rappers in a film, it's not a great barometer for a good film, is it?
Was it Most Def? There was a shark. I know there was a shark involved.
Actually, plenty of Jim Jarmusch films have got Wu-Tang Clan dudes in, and they're really good. I'll take that back.
Open Water. No, wasn't it called like Deep Blue Sea? Was it Most Def? Deep Blue Sea. 1999. Sam Jackson's in it, and sure it was Most.
LL Cool J's in it.
LL Cool J, that's right.
Ladies love Cool James.
They do, yeah. LL Cool J, that's right.
Was it a good film, Stu?
It was like one of the best films I've ever seen, yeah. Yeah.
I will do you in 1999.
Not old enough to watch Deep Blue Sea.
Or I've got to judge your films by
the sight. I know. One ticket to Deep Blue Sea, please.
Best films ever, Deep Blue Sea and Mortal Kombat Annihilation.
Okay.
Okay. The water levels slowly rise in the room. I should think so if the entire ocean's in there. Mm-hmm. Atlas.
Okay.
Cora, what do we do? Atlas.
Hang on.
Atlas starts sprinting around the room. Just in circles. He's trying to find anything. Spitting around the room trying to find anything.
Nice.
Why not? He's opening covers and drawers. Hmm. The alarm's still blaring. The shark is still crushing the door. It was totally crushing that door.
It's in the sub. And it swum down the alley. All right, okay.
It's crushing the door. Sounds like he's like beating it on FIFA or something. Like.
Yeah, crushed.
Yeah, just you got crushed. Cora, what do we do? She's still panting as Atlas finds two breathing apparatuses.
Abandon the vessel immediately.
Atlas.
All right, put these on.
Cora still pants. Is that like a nickname? Cora still pants. Cora still pants. Cora. Atlas, I'm scared. Atlas.
I know you are.
He grabs onto her hand as they put the apparatuses on. Then they climb the ladder to the top hatch as water levels rise even higher. They look at each other one last time and then open the hatch. External submarine continuous. Atlas and Cora swim out of the crashed submarine. They are quickly trying to escape together, but the shark swims up and rams Atlas and Cora. It's a bit sexy. Separating them. Cora goes flying in one direction with her apparatus damaged. She's panting heavily and she's losing oxygen in her apparatus. Out of control, she goes straight towards a jagged rock. She stops her momentum on it and cuts her hand in the process, letting out small particles of blood in the water. The shark's gonna like the blood.
I just want to make note that at the bottom of the ocean, the water column above exerts a pressure of 15,750 psi, more than 1,071 times the standard atmospheric pressure at sea level.
How many more times?
1,071 times sea level pressure.
Wow, that's quite a lot.
They would just pop the second that hatch opened, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, that pressure. And also, they wouldn't be able to see anything.
That's mad, isn't it?
Apart from, like, glow-in-the-dark things.
At this pressure, the density of water is increased by nearly 5%. So it's 5% more water per water than at sea level, because it's just all the pressure. That's mental.
I wonder what would actually happen. You know, like, I would like some scientists to explain in, like, quite a lot of detail exactly what would happen if you went swimming at that level.
Yeah. Your lungs would just, like, everything would, yeah, I don't know.
It would be quite nasty. Okay.
Go, Cora.
She quickly tries to cover it up, but the shark appears behind her. She turns, panting. She's panting underwater. The shark slowly starts swimming towards her. He opens his massive jaw until Cora starts vigorously swimming upwards. She keeps going, but sees nothing above her except being trapped by more water.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, going along with your theory there, Stu.
Yeah.
The shark bites onto her pants leg and pulls her downwards. She's grabbing her pants.
Yeah, not her foot.
I mean, this is shark's bit of hole in the submarine, and you can just imagine his tiny little teeth just grabbing her pants.
Like shaking it like a little dog. Get off!
The shark keeps sending her downwards into the darkness. She tries to pull away, but can't escape. Then, the shark bites off an entire bit of her pants. Not foot, not leg. Entire bit of her pants.
So the writer has not only painted her as a hysterical and weak woman, but he's now undressing her.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Nice.
This is definitely written by imagine it was written by some like alpha male or some like high profile politician, like, and that's how they see themselves. I'm going to call myself Atlas.
Atlas, you know, the way
Boris Johnson's written like novels and stuff with like spy novels and that, hasn't he?
Has he?
Yeah. I need to Google. Yeah, he's written actual novels. It's meant to be absolutely horrific.
Oh, no.
Let me see. Boris Johnson, 72 Virgins.
What?
He's written the book called 72 Virgins.
What's that about?
A comedy of errors. It's a 2004 novel by politician, journalist and current Prime Minister, Boris Johnson.
Really? 72 Virgins?
Yeah.
Wow, so it must be a suicide-y kind of thing, right?
The President of the United States plans to visit the Palace of Westminster. A Lebanese-born terrorist aims to assassinate him. Roger Barlow, a hapless bicycle-riding, tousle-haired MP, aims to foil the attack in order to distract from scandal involving his financial entanglement in a lingerie shop.
No way.
Named Eulalie. This is a real thing. This is the current Prime Minister of the United Kingdom has written himself into a terrible book.
I think Saddam used to write romance novels.
Oh, really?
And Kim Jong Il, I think, was also a novelist, maybe romance as well.
Didn't Kim Jong Il like have loads of wild claims that he invented the hamburger and?
Oh yeah. Just
discovered unicorns.
He only played golf once, and when he did, he got a hole in one. Yeah. He was born, yeah, in Korea. You're born like the most, one of the most sacred places in the Koreas, especially for the north, is this lake, I think. Or there's a mountain. I should know this. There's this mountain and this lake, I think. And anyway, it's like super holy or, you know, revered. And apparently, he was born there. Like, he was born at the
Oh, okay.
On the mountain, so he was extra of holy or whatever.
I mean, obviously he was a monster and stuff, goes without saying. But if you got absolute power in a dictatorship like that, I mean, you've got to have fun with your legacy, haven't you? You know, I mean, fair play to saying like hamburgers are great. Yeah, I invented that.
Yeah.
I'm responsible for hamburgers. Yeah, unicorns, yeah, they exist. I know where they are.
Right, just... right. Yeah, I used to ride one. I'm really good at riding them. Actually, no, also, I remember now, in the middle of Pyongyang in North Korea, they have it's like the Arc de Triomphe. You know, in Paris, the Arc de Triomphe? Mm-hmm. They built one in Pyongyang, and it was something like 10% bigger in every dimension.
Oh, God.
So it's bigger, and they said the French copied their... If you see the same thing in Paris, that's because they liked our one so much.
They went and made their own 500 years ago.
It's fascinating. I'd love to go to Pyongyang. I'd love to go and visit.
Would you go if, like, you know, there was a job for work and stuff? Would you take the risk?
Yeah, of course.
Would you?
Oh, 100%. It's quite difficult because, you know, everyone wants to go. So it's, you know, if the jobs come up there, it's they're quite sought after. And it's normally small teams. But, yeah, I used to know someone who would go in a lot from China for cameraman. He'd go and do stories. You know, they cover the rocket launches and mass games and things. And he's, like, smitten with the place, like, taken with the place. Like, it's just, it gets his teeth into you. Like, you don't...
It's fascinating.
It's fascinating to... I mean, you don't want to live it, but you want to go and view it, you know?
Yeah, of course. You know, just pure curiosity. Like, the human mind just is just curious about the place, isn't it? Right. And how people live, and because, you know, so little. I'm not sure if I had a similar job to yourself, Stu, I'm not sure I would want to go, you know? I've just heard too many stories about, you know, just tiptoeing into the wrong... law and just being like snapped up or whatever, or using googling something I'm not supposed to or whatever, you know.
That guy Otto Wambia, I think his name was Otto Wambia. American, I think he was over there. It was like a student exchange or maybe something religious, I don't know, but he was in his hotel, and he went to the wrong floor or something, maybe intentionally, I don't know, but he took a poster from the wall. You know, you've seen this North Korean poster. Thought, oh, that's a great souvenir. So he takes it. And, they take him when he's leaving. They sentence him to hard labor. They put him in a labor camp. And he doesn't do well. And they only release him when he's, like, they can see he's not going to last. So they release him, and I think he dies, like, on the way back to the US, or when he just gets back to the US. Yeah.
Fucking hell.
Yeah.
That's just horrific. Brutal. That's truly horrific.
Right?
Those stories, that terrify me, because...
Yeah.
That curiosity of, like, oh, man, wouldn't it just be great to take that home, put it on my wall, and then... No. It just doesn't happen.
No. Take only photos, leave only footprints. Or something, it can't even take photos.
No, just exactly. It's like, shit.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Interesting stuff. Right, let's get back into it. Pulls it down by her pants leg. She starts screaming. Must just sound like bubbles. I wonder what that sounds like, Stu. Here we go. 1, 2, 3.
Just like that.
Out of nowhere, an octopus comes and hides her from the shark. It's like the Little Mermaid now.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, now. Ariel. Cora's scared at first, but then she makes friends and they sing a song together.
The sea witch.
Internal. Cora's quarters. Morning. Cora wakes up from the bed, still wearing a navy suit. She looks confused around her, wipes the sweat off her face. She turns to see a wedding picture of her and Atlas.
Oh!
As well as a mini stuffed octopus with a note, saying,
I know you're scared, but don't worry. I'll be here when you get home. I promise.
Cora smiles at the note. External ship continuous. A giant navy ship cruises through the ocean on a sunny day. Fade out. The end.
It was all a dream.
It was all a dream. What a fucking cop out.
I know.
I hate that. It's like you get to the end of something. I mean, that was a lot of fun, that screenplay. I really enjoyed it. But just bang, 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 bang. Oh, yeah, it was a dream. I'm just like, oh, God.
Right, you wanted a bit really? More meat. I know, it is a cop-out.
But thanks very much, writer, for disappointing me so much.
Who was it? Did you say who it was?
I don't think there was a name on that one, you know.
No, anonymous.
Well, thanks anyway, man.
Thanks, C-level threat.
I never thought I could find love with a cute girl in the sub. Turns out we were the only two people that were on board. There was a giant monster got in the way of Cupid. The girl, she didn't like me. She said my name was stupid.
Yeah. Okay. I have a script. I have a script in front of me.
You certainly do. And what is it called?
Oh, I love it. Alien Hospital. Alien Hospital by Brad W. Harris.
It sounds like a mobile game, doesn't it?
Alien Hospital. I love it. I was like Rick and Morty episode. You remember that?
Yeah,
like interdimensional
of course.
Cable. So it goes... Oh, he goes like God. To the doctor. He goes, "I'm in an alien hospital." For me, that is. To you, it's just a hospital.
That interdimensional cable where he's literally just making stuff up on mic and then they're animating it.
Yeah,
that's just fantastic, isn't it?
You put the squeege gore into the plumbus and twist it until you.
There's two brothers and the brothers are. The brothers got friends, and the friends with the brothers, and it's just animating everything you're saying.
It's so great, funny. Isn't it? I think I just read they're commissioning another. Oh no, it's been commissioned like forever, but they're working on season 7. Does that sound right?
I think there's only 4, you know. So I think it might be 5.
Or maybe they just commissioned it to 7.
Justin Roiland has got a new. TV show out, hasn't he? A new animated TV program. He said it's not quite as dark as Rick and Morty.
Right.
But he's quite proud of it nonetheless.
Nice.
What's it called? It sounds good. It's called Solar Opposites. Definitely going to watch it.
Oh, nice. Oh, brilliant.
Check it out.
Check it out. Right, Alien Hospital. Ready?
Alien Hospital. I was born ready.
Internal hospital, the patient room. Day. Robert Hastings, 35, brown hair, brown eyes, with a Friar Tuck hairstyle.
Think that's necessary, or do you think that's going to come back later and there's going to be relevance?
It's one of those hairstyles that's never going to come back.
Friar Tuck.
I know, right? Sits in his hospital bed. He wears a dark green hospital gown and is reading a science fiction novel. The novel sports the image of a flying saucer on the cover. His family stands around him. With him are his wife, early 30s, and his daughter, aged 11. At the head of his bed, there are many different coloured balloons embroidered with Get Well Soon.
Embroidered balloons.
Right? He's a well-liked man who all his friends want him to get better. There is the sound of a news report coming through the television, but it's muffled in the background. The curtains are drawn to eliminate a lot of the bright sunlight from coming into the room. Robert's wife is reading a medical magazine. Modern proctologist. Wife, are you sure about this procedure? Robert closes his book and looks at his wife, who's staring back at him with a concerned look on her face. Relax, babe. The doctor... No, she doesn't say it. Relax. The doctors. How bad can it be? But what if something goes wrong? Says the wife. Now, Dr. Foray, early 50s, grey hair, enters the room. Mr. Hasting? Yeah. Hi, I'm Dr. Foray. How are you feeling? I could be better. I bet you could, yep. You know, you're very fortunate to have come to us when you did.
So is he choosing to have this operation? By the sound of his wife, it sounds like it's something he's chosen to do.
Well, it doesn't sound like it's an emergency if they've had time to get balloons, you know.
I wonder if he's having some sort of experimental cosmetic surgery or something.
Just like him. No, it was a Jerry has his, like, he has to give up his penis.
What's that?
In Rick and Morty, where he has to give up his penis.
I can't remember that.
Because it'll save, like, the life of the galaxy's most beloved civil rights.
Yeah. Oh, God, that character Jerry. Fucking hell. I was just thinking if he's choosing this, like, weird procedure, maybe he's getting transformed into, like, you know, that weird lion man or something.
Yes, Dragon Man.
It's Dragon Man, and there's like a lion one as well, isn't there? And they just look like dead sweaty and shiny.
Where's that?
Google cosmetic surgery lion man.
No. Oh, God. Like, doesn't, with all the tattoos and the...
Doesn't look like a lion, unfortunately.
Lion Man. What, like, what do I have to type? Lion Man surgery?
Cosmetic surgery lion.
Oh, fuck!
Yep.
Thank you. Oh, he's got little claws. Look at him.
Maybe that's what he's getting done.
Oh, God, there's no going back from that, is there?
There's
Dennis Avner, a.k.a. the Catman. Rip. Oh, he's no longer with us.
Okay.
That doesn't mean we can't still make fun of him.
God, that just makes me, feel bad about it now.
And how do you think he died?
Oh, God, heart attack.
Hairball.
Oh, God, fucking hell. Oh, shit.
He's licking his own asshole.
Oh, man. We're going to hell, you know.
If I believed in it, I'd believe you. There's got to be like a snake man. I've seen someone who had their tongue sliced down the middle as well, so they could.
I've seen that. Well, yeah,
they
yeah.
could go, you know.
I mean, just why though? Why? Wow. Why bother?
Yeah, it's got to be. I mean, like, there's a lot of reasons, I'm sure.
No, there isn't. There's no reason for that.
Oh, brilliant! All right, I think Robert could be getting that done. Let's find out. I bet you could. Robert nods while the doctor speaks to him. Hey, Robert, with your rare condition, no other hospital in the country would have the tools to treat your condition. The tools.
Hmm.
Be lucky we caught it when we did.
Can't lose with the tools he used.
Can't lose the tools he used. Robert, I'm still trying to wrap my head around this new rare condition. I've never heard of it before. Well, that's what makes it new, says Dr. Foray.
Lion man.
Hey, little lion man. Think of it like mad cow disease.
Oh.
Except that we can get rid of it a lot easier. Are you ready to go into surgery now?
Wait there. You can't get rid of mad cow disease with surgery. Is it going in to get the udders removed? It's a disease.
Oh, my God.
It's in the name. It's a disease.
Right. So it's like mad cow disease. It's a lot easier to get rid of. But we're the only hospital that can do it. And let's do it with surgery. Are you ready? Oh, my God. Robert
is he ready?
Yes, he is ready. Yes.
don't do it, Robert.
The doctor waves his hand towards the window, and two nurses come in from the hallway to roll Robert out of the hospital room. Okay.
In like a giant atmosphere, like on Gladiators or something. He's getting rolled out of the hospital.
Gyro, yeah. We're in the hallway. The nurses and the doctor roll Robert down the hallway.
It's an hamster ball.
Like a sausage. Yeah. Keeps going off to one side. They have to straighten him up.
Yeah.
As Robert is being rolled down the hallway, he looks left and he notices a mirror on the wall next to the receptionist's desk. They roll just a little ways to two big double doors. Next to the door, there is a window and a sign next to the door. That reads operating room. Okay, could have just put he goes down to the operating room.
Okay. Robert, I was going to say it's sausage roll room.
The sausage roll. Greg's. Greg's is for players.
That's
plebs.
The procedure.
Yeah.
Sage is for players, yeah.
Oh, man. Robert is rolled into the operating room. In the operating room. The nurses stop him in the centre of the room with a foot. Above Robert, there are two giant lights that shine down upon him.
He's in an oven.
The light egg wash. Golden brown.
That's why this is the only hospital I can do.
Yeah. I've seen that Michelin Web skit where they're
egg wash, sorry. Oh god!
That Michelin Web skit where they're in, they're like a vets, and they get like the nurse goes, "Sir, we've got an emergency," and they like open the doors, and like this pheasant comes in. They're like, "Oh god, I don't know. Let's work on it." And the film crew's filming them, and they're like, "We're gonna try a traditional salve of olive oil on the feathers and some garlic." And maybe some sage. We'll see. And it's too late. Not going. They're both like look at it. No intention of saving it. Just want to eat it.
That's great. Yeah. I haven't seen that one. That sounds boss.
The nurses come in the cellar room. One of the nurses. One of the nurses walks off and returns with an anaesthetic tank hooked up to a plastic mask set. Jesus Christ. She hands the mask to the doctor, who's just placed a mask over his nose and mouth, as well as a surgical cap. Okay. Dr. Foray, we're going to start the anaesthesia. Robert nods as the doctor places the mask over Robert's face. Have you ever been in surgery?
When I was very, very young, yeah.
Have you? Do you remember it?
No, not particularly. I've got like some weird sort of... I was only 5 years old. Got some weird, vague flashes of memory, but it's not reliable enough, no.
I've had a couple of times, right? And I had about a year or so ago, I had to have my appendix out.
Oh, shit.
I'm like, at home. Like, she goes, go to the hospital if you're that worried about it. I was like, yeah, I will. Convincing myself from Google, Dr. Google, that it's the appendix.
Oh, no, WebMD.
Yeah. I got in and they were like, oh, God, thank God you came in. Your appendix are about to burst. I was like, yes, shit. See?
No way.
Take that, internet.
Is that what, did you self-diagnose yourself as that?
Yeah, I mean, they say if you get the pain in the middle or something, but then the real key is if it starts like moving to the left, or something like that. Look it up.
No way.
Listener. But no, it's if it moved, and it moved, so I was like, oh, God. So I went in and they said, yeah, appendix, like, it hasn't ruptured, so this will be a nice, clean... Anyway.
Oh, shit.
The anaesthetic, it's... And I've had it a couple times, but you breathe that gas, and they go, count 10, 9, you know, and you've gone. There's not even the illusion of time passing.
Like, oh, really?
It's like eyes closed, eyes open. I think it's the closest thing to being dead that you can... And I think it might be like a borderline thing, like between being alive and dead. That's why anesthesiist, what is it?
Anesthetist.
That's why anesthetists are so like skilled. It's like they're constantly monitoring this like fine line between... making you too asleep.
It's an unbelievable skill. I do think they're very underrated by a general layman, you know, including myself.
Right.
They're like elite level, sort of operating at an insane level, these guys.
And everyone's different, like different, you know, systems and whatever. But no, I remember getting knocked out and it was like that and you're just coming to a groggy going, huh? Are we doing the surgery? And they're like, okay. It's like 4 hours later.
Oh, shit.
You just imagine just being laid out like an alien on a slab.
Yeah.
You know,
getting the ass spider removed.
Right?
Is that what you thought it was?
That's what I thought it was, yeah.
And oh, I, man.
Yeah.
I think I vaguely remember you telling me about that now, when it happened at the time. What was the pain like before you went in? Was it, like, unbearable?
No, it was like, I don't know, it was like, it was just a sharp pain, like 4 out of 10, 5 out of 10.
Oh, all right, so not insane.
It wasn't like a 1 where you go, oh, I just ate something bad or whatever. But it was like a 4, so it was like, oh, this is... And you can't move to make it better. It was... Eh. Oh,
this is different, and it's definitely not normal sort of
but
thing.
But the appendix, I later learned, and well, I didn't learn then. I'd heard about it before. The appendix is thought to be a... what's it called? A vestal organ? Is that the right term? Probably not. It's an organ that they think was useless, right?
Yeah.
So it's a leftover thing from when we used to eat plants or whatever. Completely wrong. They now know... like pretty convincingly that your gut bacteria, right? It's so important, so important. Like it control your mood, it can control your whole body, your gut bacteria. And when you have like a full sickness, right? And you get, this isn't very funny, I've just realized. When you get like really sick, and maybe you take the antibiotics or whatever, you know, and you lose all your gut bacteria, the appendix repopulates your gut.
Oh,
it's like
shit.
A little store. All that bacteria that you got from your mother when you were young, all that life of, oh, I can eat anything, I've got a great immune system, all stored in the appendix, right?
Whoa,
all
that's
those
crazy.
Lessons learned, and then they just whipped it out.
Oh, shit. Yeah. I wonder why it's so common for it to, like, need to be removed or if it's come to best or whatever, because it's you're about the third or fourth person that I know around our age that's had it removed.
Really?
Yeah.
And if you lived 100 200 years ago, you would kill you if it ruptured.
Oh yeah,
it
yeah,
would yeah. Like imagine the amount of people used to die from their appendixes bursting or whatever, you know.
Yeah, that's fascinating though, Stu. You said it's not funny, but it's definitely educating me.
We look to entertain and inform, right?
Yeah, that's it. There you go. people listen to this podcast to learn stuff, don't
they? I think that's why most of them are here.
Maybe we need to put ourselves in a different category. Yeah. Education and current affairs.
With Americast. Yeah. Right. Robert is being knocked out. Okay. In the hospital operating room 3 hours later. As Robert wakes up, he notices alien hospital staff.
Here we go.
Oh, yeah, it's an alien hospital, isn't it?
Yeah.
Alien hospital staff. The operating room staff are now very greyish, wrinkled-looking alien-like creatures with huge heads. Classic alien.
Classic.
Robert struggles to break free as the nurses hold him down. On his chest, there is a stitched-up line, going right down the centre of his chest.
He's lucky they're not, like, xenomorph aliens there, isn't he? Imagine that. That'd be quite a lot worse than being, like, wrinkly grey dudes. You don't know what that means?
No.
It's the general term for, aliens and alien. Acid spitting.
What?
Head. Geiger. H.R. Geiger, dudes. You know Alien film?
Oh, yeah. Oh, right. Teeth and tentacles and...
There you go.
Yeah.
I should have just said teeth and tentacles.
Yeah. Sometimes they come at night. What is it?
They mostly come at night.
Mostly. yeah, he's lucky. He sounds like nice aliens. As Robert breaks free, he makes a dash for the door, but stops as Dr. Fournet speaks. Where do you think you're going, Robert?
Now, come on, Stu, that's not an alien voice.
What the fuck? Come, Robert!
Ha 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 ha! That's definitely an alien.
Robert looks back at the alien looking doctor with a very confused look.
Oh man, you can't do that for the rest of it. I'm sorry.
That was like a hospital full of us. You're not going anywhere.
God.
Is there a lot more dialogue?
I think so.
Well, it's not that much. Okay. Robert stops to ponder for a moment and then decides to go ahead, and he rushes out of the door in the hospital hallway. As Robert pushes his way out of the doors of the operating room, he looks around and notices that everyone else in the hospital, they're aliens as well.
What?
There are receptionists behind the reception desk. There are security guards walking the hallways. There are people with little children standing at the reception desk. All aliens. Robert looks surprised. He suddenly leans over, holding his stomach. Ooh. He hears everyone laughing at him. Not a very nice hospital. Without realizing it, he starts to laugh hysterically. Robert looks down at his hands and he sees that they've turned grey. Robert looks into the mirror next to the reception desk that was referenced earlier and sees that he's changed into an alien himself. He drops to his knees and screams.
This has gone a little bit out of limits, hasn't it, this one?
Internal hospital, patient room, day. Suddenly, Robert raises up from his bed in a scream. He looks at his arms and inside his gown at his chest. He looks around at the family that's present at his bedside. Just then, the doctor comes in. This could have been a dream.
It's going to be another dream.
Mr. Hastings, says Dr. Foray. Yes, and you're Dr. Foray. That's right. You know, you're lucky you came to us when you did. Robert gets out of bed and grabs his wife's hand. Come on, we're leaving. I suddenly don't feel comfortable here anymore. I want to go to a different hospital. Robert grabs his daughter's hand as well, and they make their way out of the door. As they leave the room, Robert looks back into the room and hears the audio of the news broadcast on the television. News reporter, flying saucers have just destroyed the White House. The broadcast continues, but becomes gradually more muffled, fade out the end.
I love like that would be what the news reporter says.
Yeah, yeah.
Flying saucers. Like...
With highs of 30 Celsius, back to you, Lorne. Flying saucers have just destroyed the White House.
Thanks, Jane. Flying saucers have just destroyed the White House.
That's great. That was great.
That was funny.
So he went to a hospital. He had a dream that he had the surgery, and then he woke up and he was normal again. And he was like, nope, and left. But Earth was being invaded by aliens at the time. And he was reading a book with flying saucers on at the start.
He was. So the clues are there. Maybe he's definitely got like a propensity to think that aliens are there. Like, you know, some people are just ready for things, aren't they?
Yeah.
Maybe he's got that in his mind. Maybe he's sort of spotted something, you know, along the way. You know, when you watch these Derren Brown programs, and he'd take like whoever he's trying to convince of something on a taxi journey, and then sit them down and then talk them through bits and bobs. But then he's planted things on the taxi journey.
It's great, isn't it?
And they've seen them and he pulls them out of their subconscious. Maybe it's something like that where he half knew that it was going to happen or whatever. I don't know.
Have you just done that to me without me realising it?
Yeah. I'm not that clever, Stu.
I just fancy a really cold beer. Just drink a Coca-Cola. Yeah, no. No, I don't know. It's like, it's so clever, isn't it? That Justin Willman on Netflix has a show called Magic for Humans. He does the same thing there. But he shows you. He's like talking to someone in the street, just doing his spiel. But he's saying things like, you know, seven. But he keeps saying like the number seven in different ways or so, you know.
Hmm.
referencing. He's like, pick a number from 1 to 10. They're like, okay, I've got one. You're like, I know what it is. Before you knew what it was. They're like, 7.
Oh, shit.
How did you know that? Because I told you to think it. Yeah.
That's really clever, all that stuff, isn't it?
Oh, but it's like, so clever.
So manipulative as well, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll watch that. Is it good?
It's great.
It does. It fascinates me, things like that. Like when you realise how, you know, the human subconscious, and we're all just going about doing our thing, and then there's people who know more about it, and you think, wow, I mean, could you learn that stuff, or could it be useful? I don't know.
Yeah, I bet it would make like going through life a breeze, you know. Convincing people to give you a table in a restaurant, or you know, dealing with the local council or something. Yeah. Don't worry, sir, we will come back and collect your bins. You know.
Absolutely, I don't know. Man.
Very good. Okay. Good choice. Alien Hospital.
I never thought about the aliens. They made me feel small. Never thought about invaders of this planet at all. Giant brown heads and weird funny eyes. I hope they don't insert a probe in my backside. No!